ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys. After the fourth day of the fifth Ashes Test, we have one final day and 18th and last day of this year's Ashes series. Corbin Middlemouse alongside my podcast co-host Ed Cowan at the Sydney Cricket Ground. And again, Teddy is here in person to pull it all apart after a record day four crowd. So the final crowd in the end, Teddy, was over 42,000. The biggest day four crowd since Bodyline here at the SCG. So how about those for some numbers? How are you firstly, Teddy?
I'm well, Corb. I did hear a crowd number in the high 30s just before tea, so the quintessential, they came in after work, I think, was actually true today. But a great day in the Sydney sunshine, and they were treated, the crowd, to probably maybe the best 100 of the test match.
Of the series?
No, not of the series, of the test match.
The best 100 of the test match. So that includes Joe Root's first innings 100.
Better than Root's first innings 100.
It includes Steve Smith's 100.
Yep. Travis Head's 100.
And Travis Head's 100.
I think given the storyline around it,
yep,
never scored a red ball 100 professionally. Not one. SCG game on the line, and well and truly on the line, not just on the line, well behind the eight ball, drags England back to a position where you think, are they a sniff here? Don't say it. And he's still going. Mm. And did not play a false shot, didn't baz ball it, just looked as accomplished a player as anyone has all test match. So I think it probably could be the 100 of the test.
It felt like the kind of day, didn't it, that we saw the arrival of a great generational player, that this is a guy that we're going to talk about for years to come. And for England, maybe it's the little bit of hope they were hoping for at the end of the series, that the light at the end of the tunnel, to think, look, this has been a horror campaign. In all likelihood, they're going to go 4-1 down when they came out here thinking that they were a huge chance to win. And then to get that moment from Jacob Bethell, as you said, I mean, clearly the unmissable storyline around him is the fact that he didn't have a first-class century, as you touched on, until today, which came at test level in just his sixth test. But he's a 22-year-old out of Warwickshire that grew up in Barbados, made the move at 12 years of age on scholarship to go and play in the UK. And then, obviously, we've seen him in franchise cricket. He's got this unusual situation at the moment because he's so gifted as a white ball player. He's already captained England in white ball cricket. He basically plays the IPL, which clashes with the start of the county season. He plays the white ball games for England, which clash with more of the red ball county season. And then basically, he barely plays red ball cricket anywhere. He's only played three first-class games all year until he came into the team in Melbourne, and then he peels off that kind of 100 today.
Doesn't that make it all the more remarkable?
Yeah.
I mean, we can sit here and say, the wicket was flat, or you could pick every excuse under the sun not to say that was a remarkable innings, and yet it was.
Yep.
And so, not for all his skill in the white ball game, he showed the makers stickers. He played straight. They bowled well to him. Australia bowled well today, make no mistake, and we can dissect that little moment of Bolan to Root that ended up with the Root dismissal. But they built pressure. He had to work for every single run today, and he just went about his business as though he was the consummate professional. And this is someone who doesn't play this format of the game all that regularly. And so 80-odd in the test series against New Zealand, at the start of the series, I said, Bethell at three. And you were like, no, my boy's Ollie Pope. He's my guy.
Yep.
How do you feel about that now?
I'm sure it's going to be a what might have been tour for England. And that's going to be one of many things that I'm sure they'll look back on. They think, damn, maybe we should have played this kid a little bit earlier. It was a special knock. I mean, I went back through during the day and looked at all the names and guys that have scored their first-class 100 in a test match.
Three Englishmen on that list.
Yeah. And so you sort of work your way through it. And particularly, I'm looking for the last sort of notable batsman in particular. So we look at it in recent times, because there's so many names on this list, with all due respect, that are like, Gus Atkinson,
Bowlers, Stuart Broad.
They're bowlers, kind of guys. Yashir Shah. Yeah. I was thinking Hardik Pandya. He's kind of like batting all-rounder, but again, probably not the same category out of white ball cricket. Jason Holder did it in 2015. there's a couple of guys that skew the stats, including, you know, two Irishmen and Bangladesh, and, you know, there's not as much first-class cricket and everything else. Then I got to one name, Kumar Sangakkara. You think, wow, like maybe that's the comp where we're looking. You know, there's obviously so much cricket for Bethel still to play, but it felt like that kind of you know, day where you look at someone and the eye test tells you that you're watching something special.
Well, the eye test told us we're watching something special many moons ago when you could see this kid bat. I actually think he bats a little bit like Kumar.
Okay.
You know, the way he stands tall on the back foot punch, he's into his drives. There's a bit of Sangakkara in his batting, actually. So that's a strange alignment of the stars. I didn't know that name. I saw a little list pop up, but I didn't see that name. That's fascinating. And he still has a chance to push the game on tomorrow. I mean, it'd probably take something calamitous for Australia to not win this game in pretty reasonable fashion. But there's a world where there's a bit of a tricky chase on the cards. If Bethel and the last two batsmen can put on, I don't know, 60 or 80, Australia will win. But sometimes funny things happen at the SCG.
I don't know if that's a world we're living in, but
I guess I know what you're saying. I'm trying to say his job's not done yet.
How does he approach the morning? So he's got five overs before the second new ball. So does he try and get as many as he can, knowing that he's batting with 10 and Jack, or does he just hang around and hope that someone stays with him?
I thought that the new ball was probably the best time to bat.
Okay.
It swung for a second, and Zach Crawley kicked one.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it was pretty easy batting.
Different gravy for Bethel, though, as opposed to some number 10 coming out and he's got Mitchell Starc with a brand new ball.
Yeah, sure. But you can protect him for five or six overs.
Mm.
The wicket's still playing well. It turned a little bit, and we can talk to Bo Webster's off spin. But as far as I can see, there's no reason why they can't put on 60 or 80 runs.
So he's got Tung coming in at number 11, and he's got Potts, obviously, with him at the moment. He lost Kaas, who's a guy that at least has a couple of first-class hundreds to his name. I think he's got a 50 in first-class cricket. But when I have a quick look through Potts's history with the Blade, he does have one first-class 100 himself. So there you go. He's got 149 not out in first-class cricket. So that's a pretty decent score. He averages 19 with the bat.
I mean, most likely the narrative of Australia go bang-bang and knock the runs over and we're all having, you know, sponsors product by lunch.
Yeah. All right. The Australian side of things today. So it felt like the story can be told very much through one man. It was Jacob Bethel's day. But from an Australian point of view, we're talking about the slug from Snug, Bo Webster, who made 71 not out with the bat. That's his second highest test score. Again, limited sample size behind only his 72 that he got in the World Test Championship final, which I think history kind of forgets more than it should, given the fact that Australia lost the test match. I wonder if the Aussies won that and, you know, Markram doesn't get the second innings 100 and everything else, how much we'll remember how important that innings was, even though it wasn't three figures. So he ran out of partners. He was 71 not out. And then he picked up the ball, bowling off spin, something that he's barely done since the COVID shutdown. And so rare do we see someone perform the two roles nowadays in test cricket. And he's performed them both in the same test as a medium pacer and an off spinner. He got two wickets in the same over. And then he picked up the big scalp of Ben Stokes, who was looking to cut a ball a little too close to him and nicked it through to first slip. How significant was the day for Bo?
Very. I mean, not just in the context of this test, but probably his career. This is someone who hasn't played any cricket for 5 or 6 weeks, really. He's been on tour and in and around the team, and to turn up and bat as gracefully and as proficiently as he did, and then just to turn it on and hardly miss the towel with his off spin. I mean, the ball that got Harry Brook out was a lovely piece of bowling. Turned and bounced. Did Brook like an absolute dinner. Turned much more than he thought. He got gifted a wicket by Will Jacks, and that kind of is pretty analogous to the entire series for England. Every time they get themselves back in the game, they hand it back on a platter, because at that point there was a world where England could push forward. But to kind of stick on the topic of Bo Webster, I think he averages now 44 with the bat and 20 low 20s with the ball. And so, you know, the numbers alone start standing out for themselves. What strikes me is he's a player that knows how to contribute. when he's not contributing with the bat, he does so with the ball. If he's not doing it with the ball, he's doing it with the bat or in the field. And so he provides a nice energy, and there's a nice relaxed nature to him of just being the consummate professional. He's someone who understands his game. So, yeah, I mean, his off-spin wasn't bad on the tour of Sri Lanka, but to be able to mix between those skills is pretty incredible. And then, you know, we had the conversation last night on a like-for-like basis.
It was unmissable today. It was unmissable.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you said that.
Because, I mean, and I feel for Cam Green. I think I'm a Cam Green guy. I was in Wellington when he scored his 100. Yeah, he's a native sandgroper, as am I, so I sort of follow his career closely. And I feel like he's a guy that's gone from, you know, batting at number four when Steve Smith went and opened, because all the talk was at the time that's where Cam Green's best spot in the lineup is. We need to build this whole thing around Cam. Then Smith came back in. He's got squeezed out. He got injured. He was at three. Pat Cummins said he's going to have a prolonged run at number three. Then he was down at five. Then he was the number six. Now he's the number seven. Now he's the number eight. And so all of this is going on. And now he plays alongside Bo Webster. Obviously, Webster, unbeaten 70. Green misses out with the bat. He made 37 look good and then played a regrettable shot. Hit it down square leg's throat. But today, it felt like it unravelled a bit for him. Bowled six overs for 40 on a bumper plan, and then he's shelling catches, which he almost never does.
Mm. I mean, often your form in the field mirrors your form elsewhere, just from a confidence factor, and your mind starts to drift about, you know, the other facets of the game that might be lacking. So it was pretty black and white today. I mean, the only thing on my mind is, the way Webster's performing, maybe he is the answer for number five. You know, if you're rolling forward, he doesn't strike me as a test number five. That role as the test number six or seven just feels right for him. But I reckon there's going to be a temptation rolling this forward that Webster bats at five and Green bats at seven. So it wouldn't be my team. And yeah. I've stopped trying to predict how they think about selection. Yeah. But that wouldn't surprise me. That's not something that would make me fall over sideways.
But the guy that's generally the guys that are generally in and around the team are generally the ones that you first look at. Yeah, understandably, they're around the squad. So, I think if I was trying to predict now, and there's so much water that's got to go under the bridge between now and August, I wouldn't be surprised with Usman going out if there's a reshuffle. What about if Carey batted five? Is five too high? Are we starting to get a little too funky with it at that point, particularly with Khawaja going out and sort of spread your left-handers out a bit. You know, there's a decision to be made on Weatherald. Head's obviously one of them at the top, but then you've got, you know, Marnus and Smith. Again, there's probably another conversation around Marnie. Mm. You've got right-hander, at least if you put Carey at five, you're into the left-handers and then you're back to your right-handers again.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It's fine in the modern age of, you know, 3.5-day tests. You get a grinding test like we're seeing out here, where it's going to go, you know, into the fifth day. That's a bloody hard ask of Alex Carey. If you lose two or three quick ones and he's kept for 120 overs, it's just not doing right by him. He doesn't even have a time to scratch himself. So,
which is what you talk about a bit, don't you, where the experience of batting is not just putting the pads on and walking out to the middle. It's the mental prep. Mm. And I imagine what that starts at the very least, 2 wickets before you walk out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it depends. Yeah. Everyone's different. But, yep. At some point, there is a switching on moment for, you know, hear those great stories of Mark Wall sleeping out the back and someone waking him up to go score a Test 100. So everyone's different, but he's in the team to keep wicket. So I know we're trying to shuffle to keep people in and around the team, but ultimately there's a reason why wicket keepers don't bat higher than six.
He talked about recently about how he hasn't got any sort of bent out of shape fingers or anything like that. It looked like he copped a blow today and the ball rolled back and hit the helmet, which you so rarely see in modern cricket. And there was a 5-run penalty as a result of it. But he wasn't as clean today as he has been throughout the series so far. And maybe he's protecting that a little bit. But geez, he's got some credits in the bank. What a series it's been from Alex Carey's point of view. The no frontline spinner. So you sort of touched on Webster and what he was able to do is that at a tall height and got some turn and bounce. Does it reinforce that, you know, they've got Webster, he can do the dual roles? Or does it mean that they missed a trick not playing the frontline spinner in this kind of an environment? Stuart Clark certainly felt that way. He said as much on grandstand at stumps tonight that, even everything we know now, he still would have had the frontline spinner there.
Yeah, there's definitely two clear sides to this coin. And they're going to win and probably win very convincingly, and it's just an easy line to roll off the tongue. Well, we didn't need a frontline spinner. We just won another test match 4-1. Thanks for coming. But if you're a little bit more astute than that, you would say the ball's been turning and bouncing. Bo Webster caused some trouble. Imagine what your best spinner could have done. Whether that's Todd Murphy or someone else is kind of irrelevant. I do think they would have controlled the game more. There were times in this game that England actually could have driven the game in a manner that meant that they could have won the game. To win the toss, bat first on a flat SCG wicket and still most likely get hammered shows how poorly you've played with the bat and the ball. And so I don't think we can get too far ahead of ourselves and say Australia were magnificent. They've been clinical in this test match, but I think what they've lacked is some variation, particularly in that first innings when England kind of tried to get away. They only got 380, you know, that's the rebuttal. And then today they got themselves back in the game because it was all a bit samey, and they kind of ground Australia with some good batting. And it wasn't really till Bo Webster came on in, I don't know, it was the 50th over, probably, maybe a little later. You know, that spin option would have just changed the nature of the game a little bit earlier.
I think they
won't regret it. They probably should.
I spoke to Usman Khawaja at Stumps, who joined us on Grandstand at Stumps. If you get a chance to catch up on that episode, you can find it in the podcast store. Just search Best of ABC Sport, and the whole Grandstand at Stumps is there for your full match report and everything else. But he essentially said around his 43-minute press conference, which I asked him about, you know, did it have a drain on you? I mean, obviously he spoke about a number of issues. There was all sorts of response that came from it, and he essentially said, yes, it did, if I'm being honest. It take a bit to try and put that to one side and then to mentally prepare and lock into to play a test match. He said, look, if I had my time again, I would have announced my retirement earlier with the opportunity to try and clear those commitments out of the way before he had to actually prepare to play. He said he got really emotional walking out there to bat, and then on the way off, when everyone was standing up and applauding, I essentially said to him, you know, what were you thinking at that time? And he said, look, I didn't think at all for a minute as I was walking off that I wouldn't get another hit in the game. He said the game situation at that time, I felt like, you know, I would be batting again, which obviously led to the question, is he going to open in the second innings, which I sort of teased out last night, and he chuckled at that and basically said, no, I wouldn't have thought so. I'm not going to open. There's still, 119 runs. If England lost 2 for zip tomorrow, there's still plenty of runs that they got to get up until that point. I wonder how it'll change tomorrow, whether someone in the dressing room just taps him on the shoulder, say he doesn't open, but the Aussies are within, you know, 30 of winning or 20 of winning or whatever, whether someone, you know, just taps him on the shoulder and says, Uzi, go and put him on.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable thing to happen. I'm not surprised. Like, retiring is just an emotional time, let alone having to deal with that press conference and how he went about that. You know, whether it had been on his mind for a while. It's just a big week. Your family's around. It's a big week anyway in Sydney. You know, his parents live here. So regardless of the announcement, it would have been emotional. So, look, I kind of hope that Australia win 3 down and Usman gets a bat tomorrow. That'd be fantastic.
Day 18 and the final day of this year's Ashes series. So we've had 2 2-day tests. We've had 2 5-day tests in a mixed bag. You asked me leading in to this week, I think on our weekly pod, must have been on Friday, I think the last time we had a broad conversation about, you know, whether the Ashes, whether it's been a little underwhelming or where it measures up. We needed this week. I think it's been a really good test match, and it's going to go into 5 days. There's been enough in it. There's been big storylines every day. We mentioned the 400s that have been scored and some memorable moments. I think it's been a pretty successful week and record crowds. And I mean, tomorrow is going to be special one way or another. Whenever the urn's presented and the people that are in the ground, I'm sure it'll be a day they won't soon forget.
Yeah, it's been a sensational week. There's no doubt about that, and it probably is not just what the series needed. It's also probably what Test cricket needed after Melbourne. The natural rhythms of Test cricket have felt back this week in many respects. The way England have approached the game has felt a little more familiar, I guess, and more successful. They really haven't played the way that they could have on a flat wicket. They could have, aside from a couple of crazy dismissals, they have played pretty vanilla brand, really. And it's made for a very entertaining game of cricket in front of a great crowd. The weather's turned it on. I think I said after day two, it was probably one of the most enjoyable days cricket I've ever watched in my whole time here. So you're right. The series needed it, but I think it's bigger than that.
It's a great way to finish. I think we'll do it all again tomorrow here on the ABC Cricket Podcast. When the urn's presented, the test match will come to an end, as will the series. Teddy, appreciate your time as always. I will see you tomorrow.
Can't wait to wrap it all up. And then I think on Friday,
yeah,
we can have a little series debrief. You can get all the predictions back. We can go through it. We're both wrong because I think we both said 3-1. So we're off the mark there. But the rest... It's up for grabs.
We'll see how we pull it all apart on Friday. ABC Cricket Podcast, Monday and Friday, and after every day's play, catch us tomorrow at the completion of the Sydney Test.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.